This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Thanks for listening to No Joke with Billy and Adam on the HeadGum Podcast Network. This is the show where we tackle a topic oh so loosely and discuss our previous, present, and future relationship to it.
Today's topic was writing for yourself, and our guest was Rami Youssef. We hope you enjoy the No Joke Podcast. Okay, welcome back. This is the No Joke Podcast. I am Billy Scafuri.
I'm Adam Lustig.
And it is episode number 113.
113, Billy.
Last week was 112, Where the Players Dwell.
Where the Players Dwell?
Of course.
Is that...
Are you not familiar with that lyric?
Please, refresh me.
The first 7 minutes of last episode was almost exclusively about Bad Boy Records.
Bad Boy Records.
And namely, the R&B group 112
That's
Within.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, and then where the Biggie would, frankly, would always say, Room 112, Where the Players Dwell.
The Players Dwell.
Right.
Yeah. Now, what is the Biggie song, just for a little hip-hop lore, the Notorious B.I.G. song that is about a mysterious New York Knick?
Oh, yeah.
That is, like, part of, like, hip-hop slash New York
I got 90s a story Knick. To tell.
Please.
Yeah, well, the song is called I Got a Story to Tell.
Yes.
It's off of Life After Death.
That's right.
And it alludes to a night where Biggie, the whole framework of the song is that Biggie has now rejoined his group of friends who are hanging out at a party.
That's
and he's
right.
like, listen up, I got a story to tell.
That's right.
The story that he tells is actually a true story about Biggie's life,
yes.
in which he knew that one of the New York Knicks had an away game.
Yes.
And his home was going to be empty and his girl was going to be staying.
Yes.
The girl invited him over.
Yes.
To have a quick tryst.
Yes.
Said New York Knick shows up.
A tryst.
And
yes.
they kind of have to fight it out.
Yes.
That's the nature of the story. I got a story to tell.
Yes.
But the whole question was who is this Knick?
Who is this mystery Knick that yep. he's referring to?
And a few years ago, I believe Fat Joe spoiled it.
Yeah.
It was Anthony Mason.
Anthony Mason. And I love that he waited till after Anthony Mason died.
Yeah. Do you really love that?
I mean, there's a matter of fact.
Literally nothing admirable.
Nothing admirable, I guess so.
Anthony Mason was known as one of the toughest don't fuck with me guys.
Definitely
in the
true.
NBA. He dies and everyone spills his secrets.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's a little cowardly.
That's a whack attack.
Yeah, that's a whack. Yeah.
But it's not 112 anymore.
No, it's 113.
It's 113.
And we have one of our favorite people in the studio today as a guest. Comedian, old pal, good friend,
yep.
1990s expert.
Whoa.
Basketball aficionado.
Wow.
I'm taking some guesses.
Okay, wow. Big swings.
Rami Youssef.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Hey, Rami.
Are you a basketball aficionado?
I love basketball.
I know you do.
But I'm still I'm trying to follow this 112 thing you were saying
because sure.
I realized that I think I know more about it than I thought. isn't that there's a lyric in Welcome to Atlanta?
Yes.
Welcome to Atlanta where the players play, but then he has this one lyric where he goes, Saturday, it's off the heezy for sheezy. You can find me up in
one tweezy.
And that's 112.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
That's where the players
play. That's amazing. Yeah. It's so crazy the things that are just
good
sitting
you,
in your
though.
Brain.
Good for you.
Just
for
sitting in my brain. Yeah.
One tweezy. Yeah. I mean, like,
one tweezy.
That takes some, like, reverse engineering to know what they were talking about.
Oh, totally. The mind is a fascinating thing. I'm sitting here, I'm like, 112, 112. Oh, wow.
That yes. was a great song, and the remix was even more exciting when every kind of, like, geography got
yeah,
a shout
all
out.
All the cities got it.
Yeah. Puffy did the music video yeah. where he was rapping on top of Madison Square Garden. Then
cool.
they went down to, like, mm-hmm. who was it, like, Jermaine Dupri was down
That's
in Atlanta.
Yes, yes, yes.
Ludacris showed up. I mean, it was
just really brought the whole community together.
Yes, exactly.
Which it's
is,
true.
What yeah. you want music to
it's
do.
True.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's like it felt. No, that shit makes me feel warm. I'm like, yeah, so dude. Look
nice
at everyone
shouting out different area codes.
Yeah, all their locales.
I agree.
Involved.
And you're like all clearly in the same studio for a day.
Yeah.
That's fun.
yeah.
Get the gang together.
Exactly.
Yeah. The All-Star Game.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what did that lunch look like?
You know? Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
that's
what
true.
They, same restaurant. Multiple menus.
Right. You gotta have the pizza for the New Yorkers.
Yeah.
And the tacos for the West Coast.
Yes.
Oh man.
As someone who grew up in like a weird small bucolic rural town, there was something a little abstract to me about having like fierce hometown pride and being like 818, like 212. You know what I mean? I'm like, now, Robbie, you're from Jersey City.
Yeah. I'm from Rutherford, New Jersey.
Rutherford,
right by
New Jersey.
Yeah, right by Jersey City.
Yeah. Do you feel like you are like wear your Jersey pride proudly? Are you like proud of New Jersey?
Yeah, I am. I feel like I have to defend Jersey.
Yeah. From
in
what?
In a way. Just there's a lot of Jersey hate out there. Part of it's Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Right? Part of it's the obvious mob history.
Yeah.
You know, the smell, sure, like all these things.
The New York inferiority complex that exists.
Being in the shadow
oh, man.
Of a city.
And the like, armpit yeah. of America is like one of the meanest things
That's
you could
a tough
say
thing
about
to
a
mean
state.
Thing you can say.
Like, what do you really... And, like, everyone, like, feels comfortable saying it, but
yeah.
it's such an insult. Why?
So rude.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
Do you even know where that's based out of?
It's, I don't know, pure hate.
Pure hate.
I don't know.
Best
yeah,
insult
I think
come
it's
up
the
with.
Smell thing, you know, because of the... But the thing is, like, well, yeah, if Jersey smells, it's because New York's bringing all the trash.
That's
over
literally
there.
True.
Hey, hey,
that's
hey,
literally
hey, hey, hey,
but it's
hey.
Like, you know, like we, and no one's talking about that. You know, and that's
kind
of true. That's
fighting
kind of
words
defense.
4.5 minutes out.
Well, it's so funny. I grew up in Jersey, and you guys, I'm Muslim, and I would have to defend Jersey harder than Islam. You know,
oh,
people would be
God.
Like, people would be like, oh yeah, not all Muslims are terrorists, but Jersey fucking sucks.
All Jerseyers you know? Are terrorists.
all
terrorists.
Like I can build a case easily where people are like, oh no, yeah, there's like a billion Muslims.
A billion
they're
Muslims,
fine. Yeah. But Jersey
right.
is the worst state
yes,
in the country.
Exactly.
And I'm like, no, you don't get it. It's so great. It's so
fine.
Diverse.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I loved growing
That's
up.
That's kind
there.
Of my experience with Long Island too, which is like, I felt like Long Island had like not Jersey Shore, but we had like the, what was the Gotti growing up? Gotti.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
we have our own like pathetic self-tanned, over-gelled like reputation to kind of fight through as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's no surprise totally. That you and I both had that kind of like, we have to defend it while simultaneously being aware of it. And then we became writers and then we became comedians.
Yes.
I wonder if it's because we had to think critically at a young age of like how to defend what we love in a funny way.
100%.
I bet it is.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it's growing up in these places really
and you were doing
you.
And you were doing comedy like pretty early. I mean, I feel like you were even as a teen, like you were sort of sowing your comedy oats a little bit.
When I met you guys, I was
pit,
like
right?
at the pit. Yeah,
yeah.
I think I was 18, 17 or 18.
Yeah, you, I mean, everyone was young. Like I look back at our age and we were probably like 24 at the time or something like that, which is still in the life of a comedian, so young.
Yes.
Yeah. But like you and like a few of your crew were like, felt younger than all of us.
Yeah.
And there's something really cool about that. Because I was that intern at UCB before I was performing, and I was like 7 years younger than the youngest performer at UCB. And I was like looking around like, okay, I'm in the building.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So cheers to you for getting it started.
Oh, it's so crazy. It's such a crazy thing. And we were obsessed with you guys. I remember when we first saw Harvard Sailing Team, we were like, oh shit, that's sketch comedy. Like that's like the gold standard. And it's so funny. Actually, I must have been like within the last year, I had went back and like watched some of your guys' stuff. And I was like, oh, this is still like fucking awesome. Like, I think it was like you guys and Derek and Britannic.
Big time.
And Good Neighbor.
Yep.
I think those were like the four, this is like what this format can be. And, you know, the YouTube and all that stuff has gone through so much, but it's really funny because you go back and watch that stuff and you're like, oh, this was already
still
done.
Good?
Yeah, it already happened.
Right,
which is cool.
It was very much a time and place for us where it was like, we were doing sketch comedy before YouTube and then YouTube arrived and was like, well, now we can just put it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like very fortunate in that respect.
Yes. But the stuff that comes out now is not, it's never going to be better than the stuff from before because all those groups I just talked about workshopped everything on stage.
That's
true.
And you
that's
can't
true.
Beat that.
You
can't
it.
Beat that.
You're
like,
right.
It'll never – you know, it won't be that. I mean, there'll be vines or things are shorter or whatever, but like that – like there's a reason
every
why you can watch
that. Every beat is nuanced. Every beat is like rehearsed to the death.
Real performer. It's like that holds up 10 years later.
Which is
nothing makes me feel more old-fashioned than that, by the way.
What?
It's just like, well, we tried it out IRL.
We worked out
those jokes in front of a live, breathing audience, and then we committed it to the YouTube.
Right.
Yeah,
it's a good segue though about like talking about what you do on stage and then how you take that and put it on screen, because today what we're going to try and at least cover to a certain extent is writing for yourself. It's kind of appropriate for you because you've been writing for yourself obviously for about 10 years now,
right?
But more specifically for a show on Hulu coming out, or at least a pilot on Hulu.
Hopefully the world gets to see it.
But you use what you I imagine you're you do stand up so frequently like prolifically, then I imagine you're kind of beating out every single thing. Do things from the stage immediately go to the screen, or are those two separate worlds?
The pilot is almost page one to end page, influenced very heavily by my stand-up.
Really?
Yeah, like every scene is based on a premise that I knew worked.
Would work.
There you go.
And it's even in outlining a season, and because, you know, I started doing sketch, and then when I moved out here in LA, I started to just get on stage a lot, just doing stand-up. And so, you know, you start building up the material or whatever, and then as I even lay out, like, what the season would be, I'm like, oh, yeah, everything is going to be anchored by something that I know works on stage, you know? And the pilot was probably what will be the most drastic example of that, where actually every scene, I think minus one, was
like a thing that I've tried on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think is such a smart play. You know, it's like we build our whole careers and reputations and points of view on stage and in our performance, doing it over and over again. And then it's like, if we sell a project, why would we need to deviate from that and like play a character that's not what you've been seeing for the past 10 years on stage?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And so much of your stand-up is obviously, I mean, I've seen you perform a bunch and like, I feel like it's so much of it is autobiographical and about your life. So it makes perfect sense that that would sort of like translate over to a TV property that is about your life. I mean, how much of the TV show or the pilot is based on your actual life?
It's all emotionally true.
Yeah.
But the facts are a little bit different.
Yeah.
I'm not a comedian or anything in it.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah.
I mean that. Very genuinely. Every comedian feels comfortable playing a comedian in the shows that are coming out. Good for you.
Yeah. I just didn't. I think I really was trying to, you know, make a story that a lot of people could kind of connect to. And, and I think that, you know, the comedian thing works. I mean, it's already been done is one thing.
Right. Yeah.
But then the other thing is like, you know, what we're really trying to do is, you know, there hasn't been like a comedy, let alone like a dark comedy about like a Muslim family and following like this storyline. And so just wanting to make it as relatable as possible so that there's entry points for people to like – actually be like, oh yeah, like I get that emotional experience.
Right.
And I don't think there's a lot of people in America that are like, wow, yeah, I felt that way at my open mic too. You
know? Right.
Like that's not
real. Exactly.
That's not real.
When Harvard Sailing Team, we sold a pilot to ABC Family and Chris was kind of like positioned as the lead in it.
Mm.
Yeah. And we just kind of had to give each of us, it didn't matter what our careers were, but we needed to at least like paint a career on each one of us. So that at least you can like inform our storylines.
Painting one on is a nice descriptor.
You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like the central, like it was kind of our relationship. But regardless, we're like, maybe Chris should just be an actor and we can like use the audition life that we know
right.
and all of like the struggles that come with it. And he said something so profound. He was just like, people don't sympathize with people pretending to be actors.
That's right.
And I think it's the same with comedians.
Yeah.
There's just nothing – you're not inherently sympathetic to an actor.
Oh, I was reading a pilot my friend wrote, and in the opening scene it's like a comedian and he's like, something's about to happen and maybe he's going to go to jail. And I was like – make him not a comedian because comedians should go to jail.
Right.
Like, it's like I don't care.
Where's the
like,
sympathy
oh,
lie?
Oh, he's a comedian that might get good.
Right. He's like, probably an outspoken prick.
Right.
Yeah, like should learn some responsibility.
I'm always right. Listen to me. I have the microphone.
Read a book.
Lock
work
him up.
Out.
Lock
go
him
to jail.
Up.
Yeah. Like, and I was like, just change him to something else so the audience cares.
Right. Right. Right.
I feel like you're in my sort of path, Rami, parallels each other a little bit in that. We were doing sketch and like improv, and then it wasn't until I moved out here that I started dipping my toe into the stand-up universe as well. And I did feel compelled to like – I just feel like – did you feel immediately compelled to make your stand-up comedy about yourself, or was it like – did you sort of go through a phase where you're like, and bread is weird. Here's what's weird about bread.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or was it sort of immediately you're like, I should talk about my own experience and growing up as a Muslim and being –
I think for a minute I tried to write about other things and I wasn't good at
it. That's a very sketch sensibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sketch is very much, you know, observational, making it abstract.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to have your point of view.
Right.
It's a scene that's taking place.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I think like, you know, I never grew up being like, I'm a comedian. You know,
yeah.
I never grew up being like, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I was always just kind of following the energy of being with people that I enjoyed and kind of gravitating towards something that I like doing.
Yep.
But what ends up happening with that, I think, is like you're like, well, what do I have to say?
Yeah.
You know? And so a lot of, I think, the beginning of my stand-up was me just doing things I thought were funny.
Yeah,
sure. Like, here's a thought that maybe people can connect with, blah, blah, blah. And then you're in L.A. and you just get destroyed trying to do that shit.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you are lonely and then you're like, fuck, well, let me just, like – talk about this thing,
who
and then
I?
You're like, "Oh, wait, that's who I am." You know,
I
and like
that, specific, right?
That starts to like really come out.
Agreed.
And that's something that would never happen in sketch.
Yes,
I mean, maybe if
correct.
You have like a group that like is so conscious of that, but it would just I haven't seen that executed in the way that I think I see stand-ups do it.
I mean,
and I just think that it is amazing when people are writing about themselves. I mean, like, I just remember seeing you a couple of years ago. It was just like, Just the way you got on stage and you were just like, I'm bald, and I was a young bald.
Yeah. And there was just like, and then you started talking about it, and it was just so fucking funny. Yeah. And I was like, man, yeah. And I was like hearing you talk about it, and it was just like, yeah, like that's like,
yeah.
That personal shit is just like really cool. And like it's hard to find that honesty in sketch and improv.
And like moving out here, like performer aside, even as a writer, like one thing that I was constantly told over and over again was like, tell me your story.
Right.
Make your pilot about your life.
Right.
And like part of me was like, I want to be like selective. I don't want my story to have to be sold for entertainment value.
Yeah.
It's like that matters to me. So I think in the second act, I'd like to at least discuss like how we kind of use who we are to write for ourselves without making it like this is my autobiography.
A one-to-one analog.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'll do that in the second act. But first we have to do a song.
Yes.
We do songs in the act breaks.
Yes.
Whoa. We have to choose a song that we think maybe might be appropriate to what we've been talking about, what we might be talking about.
Yes, exactly.
Perhaps you have music in the show or a favorite artist that, I don't know.
That you've been feeling recently that we might want to...
Oh man, I'm so bad at music. It's so funny.
Really?
Well, we did. Our pilot sent it to like focus group testing and all that stuff. We got a lot of really good feedback.
Yeah.
One of the things they got back was everyone's like, "We don't like the music."
That hurts.
Why is it all Third Eye Blind?
Which is which is fine with me. Like, I'm not like I never, because even when I went in, I was like, I don't know, because I don't actually like watching, like when I write. I don't know about you guys, but like, I don't like imagining a song, because sometimes it's like, oh, you're just writing a music video.
Correct. Right? Yeah,
like,
correctly.
I like correct. In my mind, I'm like, okay, this whole script should work in silence.
Yeah.
You know, and then when
right.
we add music,
right.
then it'll be like fucking
compliment.
Awesome.
Yeah, let it compliment. Yeah.
But if it's like the only reason it's funny is because of that Backstreet Boys like that comes in, it's like, all right, like
the jokes
start over.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it should be a Backstreet Boys show.
So maybe we just do 3 minutes of silence.
Can we do 3 minutes of like a focus group of people being like
chatting?
Let's all just reflect. Let's all just reflect on.
Exactly.
We have to play a song. Alex.
Okay, Gabe. What about something from the Backstreet Boys?
Okay,
we mentioned them.
Sure.
Love.
There's Larger Than Life. There's I Want It That Way.
Yeah. Oh, Show Me the Meaning of
That's bold.
Okay. Yeah, because they have that. I always think about that guitar riff at the beginning. It's like
no.
Well, I always think about the, because you know none of them play instruments,
right?
And so I think about the guy that just played that one riff.
Dave, get in here.
I mean, the residuals that man has made for that. I mean, he might not have ever played another riff.
And that riff could apply to sitcoms, like a cliffhanger ending.
Oh yeah, good call.
Like, he should try and license that riff out.
Consider for your show.
100%.
Well, the fact that both of us sang that riff, like, we need to hear.
Yeah, now we must. Now we must.
So allow the No Joke Podcast to show you the meaning of being lonely. We'll be right back.
Show me the meaning of being lonely. So many words for the broken heart. It's hard to see in a crimson love. So hard to breathe. Walk with me and maybe night to light so soon become wild and free. I can feel the sun. Your every wish will be done. They tell me, show me the meaning of being lonely. Thank you.
That was the Backstreet Boys, Show Me the Meaning of Being of being lonely.
Right.
With that iconic riff.
I feel like NSYNC and Boys to Men both kind of held down the a cappella genre.
Yeah.
I felt like they were good enough singers where it was like, we're not afraid to make the last track on our CD a cappella.
Yes. Yeah.
Backstreet Boys, I feel like they wanted that song to be a cappella, but they're like, we're still going to need to add like three guitars.
Dude, the backbeat.
The spirit of a cappella is all over that song, but it's not a cappella.
That's exactly.
It's not. No, yeah. It so wants to be. And I think that's part of the loneliness.
Yeah, that is part of the loneliness.
Is that they needed instruments.
Show me the meaning of being.
It's like this band is actually making us feel lonely.
Were you a boy band guy?
Yeah.
You were.
Yeah.
Did you unironically like boy bands?
Unironically.
Same
dog. I remember going to, which is no longer a thing. It's so sad. But I remember FAO Schwartz
in
New York.
Yeah. Of course.
And
Central Park South.
Yes.
57th Street.
NSYNC was doing a performance there.
They were.
That's three songs.
Kid Brain Overload.
I bet they were.
Dolls and Justin Timberlake.
No, it was crazy. And then they handed out these dolls. From the No Strings Attached album, and it was all of the NSYNC members on marionettes, you know, with the strings attached.
Yeah,
they're being controlled.
Yes. Yep.
And my mom brought us, and it was like this huge like crowd, and we were like these little kids. My mom didn't want to wait in line,
course,
so what my mom does, she pushes us in and like to the front of the line from the back, and so she basically like and then creates some sort of system with like the adults, I guess. So my mom goes out,
creates some sort of system,
buys us sandwiches, and then, like, we're up in the front row for, like, 3 hours.
At the concert.
And it just, like, sandwiches come to us. And they're like, they're from your mom.
Ideal scenario. Your mom is a superhero.
A-plus level
mom.
Yeah,
really. Just sending us stuff, going out for walks.
That's a master class in momming.
Yeah,
she's without the responsibility. And my kids are being fed.
Amazing mom. I will never forget that roast beef that just came from this, like, crowd. And they were like, oh, it's from your mom.
members of NSYNC were probably like, how did he do that?
Yeah. How did he do it?
That is amazing.
Oh, and then when they came out, it was, oh, man.
Yeah.
Life-defining moment.
Yes. Big. I'm with you. 100%.
Did you ever dabble with the idea of starting a boy band yourself? Did you ever, like, want to...
You know, I mean, look.
Be your own Timberlake.
It's the dream that died, for sure.
Yes. Right.
That
died for a lot of people, like, 2002.
2002.
Yeah. As, like, it came out of the trend and stuff. Yeah. Like, it wasn't as trendy.
I think it had more to do with 9/11. Yeah.
Oh,
That kind of was...
Oh, that's way more specific.
Really 2002. I mean, look, that's what I'm telling you. That was that year after. Everyone was like, we need more emotion.
We need man
bands. We identify comedies as pre-9/11 and post-9/11.
Yeah.
Pre-9/11 comedies were so absurd, and the centerpiece of like so many of the things were like very like pithy, big, dumb problems,
yes,
all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And then like after 9/11, suddenly they were like, dark comedies were our comedies, or like comedies with heart, or comedies where like the person had a real problem,
yeah,
and not like they needed to save like the blimp factory.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like I even think comedies will fluctuate from like presidents, you know.
Definitely.
I mean, like It's Always Sunny, like it's just the absurdity, you know, during the Bush years, and then it's like you have Obama and it's like Louie and like Breaking Bad and like all these like dark shows, and part of me thinks like with, you know, Trump, like we're gonna go back to, you know, these bigger, like, you know, less dramedy-y things.
Yeah.
It's like depends like what people want.
Yeah. What you need from comedy.
What people need. Yeah, but they all mean a lot more.
Right.
You know,
it's hard to divorce these shows from their their actual context.
Yeah.
To me, Parks and Rec is like the most Obama show.
Yeah,
it's like government employees who like mean well and trying their best and doing well.
Yeah. Right.
And
we'll laugh at that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And just like the sheer unfettered optimism of like government employees can like, they have our best interests at heart and they're sweet.
Yes. Right.
And at worst, they're a little silly.
Right.
Yeah. Now I feel like we're way more cynical than that.
Well, the second act of the No Joke podcast, we're talking about writing for ourselves.
Yes.
Rami, you wrote something that I thought was like so funny. You were young, very young.
Uh-huh.
Do you know the video that I'm thinking about, the background actor video? I think it was like the Glee. Was it for Glee? Not for Glee.
Oh, my God.
Dude.
Oh,
this stood
God.
Out. This was like a pin. This, like, I remember watching this being like, I won't forget this.
Oh my God.
So do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
People will be able to YouTube it. No joke, listeners, I suggest that you do.
Oh my God. I haven't thought about that.
You should.
It was for 10 years. I don't
remember
know when
you
I...
say Harvard, you watch a Harvard Stanley team video 10 years later and it like, still holds up. I'm positive that those jokes still hold up. It was really masterful. It was really clever, not in performance, but also in writing.
I remember it was the Glee was holding open auditions. I decided, and so it was everyone's just sending in like singing auditions. I couldn't sing.
Yeah.
So I decided to send in an audition tape for everyone that would be in the background of the school.
All the under five
and
actors.
And so it's just all of those actors. So I just, this video's silent.
Perfect.
It's just me like miming things that would happen and behind the cast.
Like, think about what you saw 10 years ago that you remember today. Yeah. It probably mattered. It was probably good.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the main things I associate. I remember being like, okay, this is great.
Really hilarious.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I mean, that's a testament to writing for yourself, though, knowing that you don't have, I'm not a singer, but I do know how to tell a joke and make fun of this thing that everybody else wants to be a part of. Yeah.
It also feels like it's a really exciting time right now to be able to sort of like create content for yourself because the TV land, there's so much TV.
Yeah.
People are allowed to get really weird. I feel like Atlanta and like Donald Glover is a great example of someone that's making a deeply personal show about his life, but is also like wildly abstract and sort of heightened and has a lot of style to it.
Yeah.
What do you have like sort of like tonal models? Or like the people that you see that are like working TV now, it's like that is an example of someone that's folding in their real life experience of like stylistic TV that I like.
Yeah, I mean that's something I've thought a lot about
yeah.
as we put together the pilot that we just made. You know, where we're trying to tell a story that pop culture hasn't really cracked in a mainstream way. So it's interesting because I look at what Donald does and. You know, black culture is very well explored in many ways. I mean, mostly through music. You know, I mean, it's like any – and I talk about this with Gerard a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, Gerard Carmichael, who I made my show with.
Amazing.
You know, where I say – the context of his show, mm-hmm. the context of his stand-up mm-hmm. is all like post-Jay-Z, right?
Yeah.
We don't have a Jay-Z. We don't have a Biggie. We don't have any of that when it comes to talking about Muslim culture,
right.
You know, in the quote-unquote West.
Yes.
So it's been this balance of wanting to make something that has a style, that has to us, you know, the way we are hoping to structure our season is actually like the episodes kind of feel like short films, like contain short films, mm-hmm. but that do have a narrative mm-hmm. arc. But trying to find something that does sit in like a stylized place, that does have like a film quality, but that also, by merit of like there not being a predecessor, needs jokes.
Accessibility.
It needs like, and so it's like, how do you find that grounded balance and the jokes? So it's not multicam, it's not cheesy, but it's like, how do you make something cool, but it has more jokes than Louis or than Atlanta? Those shows don't need jokes.
Style, mood, they
sit,
tone.
Yeah, they sit in something that is well-discovered and well-treaded.
Do you think that your jokes need to be kind of embedded in the Muslim experience, or can they just be just absurd kind of just jokes, capital J jokes on anything?
Well, to me, I'm trying to embed a lot of it in the Muslim experience and the New Jersey experience.
Because
I think that if you can capture, because that's my experience,
right? Of course.
Right? It's shadow of the city and it's figuring out my faith.
Yeah.
And so having it sit in that, you know, probably the best equivalent, and not that we're totally going in that direction, but I would say like Woody Allen is so talky, but in a way that feels really real and in a way that, you know, you get your jokes out, but you also are seeing real people, that's something that's exciting.
That makes sense.
You know, that's something that I really like. And so it's like, how do you take that and give it, you know, the stylistic film feel?
Yeah.
You know, but get into it, you know, really, and talk, you know, because I think talking is important for what I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of alluded to it earlier at the end of the first act, but writing for yourself, it's like, for me at least, I'm not a private guy, but I do also. I'm hesitant to just like sell my story per se, you know, just be like, I'm going to give you everything that I've experienced and I don't care who, like what you do with it, as long as like I get paid and I have a job. That's like a very like, I don't know, for me, it's a very thin ice type thing where you want to kind of balance it. And I've still never written something that I think is like deeply personal. You know, I think that's like, maybe that's a lack of me being able to be vulnerable or whatever it is, but I just have never written a deeply personal comedy, anything really. And I'm curious if you feel like your pilot is deeply personal, or it doesn't feel like it's like some like experiences that you went through, and if there was any sort of hesitations, like, I don't know if I want to share this.
Oh, yeah, it was hard to write.
Yeah,
I would be crying at 3 a.m.
Really?
Like, yeah, yeah. Like while writing, definitely, like, there was a couple scenes after we shot, I was just like, oh, I can't believe, like, this is going to be.
And yeah. Like,
yeah. And it, why? Because you had to acknowledge these things that you experienced? Or, like,
yeah.
You're like, everyone's going to see my truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also, too, I think, for the culture that I grew up in. And, like, you know, I talk a lot about this in stand-up and in the show where, you know, I'm a believing, practicing Muslim. Mm-hmm. And I also am very, you know, I've also been doing comedy since I was 17.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm very embedded in multiple cultures.
That's right.
And both feel very real to me. And so reconciling that and clearly being a contradiction,
yes.
You know, like my experience, my life, my brain is like, is a form of, my friend, she's a writer. Her name's, Alia Moro. And she has this amazing, thing about, you know, being someone who's, you know, Arab Muslim, but also like, you know, grew up in this millennial like
yeah.
Western culture
yeah.
and she calls it the art of mastering schizophrenia.
Yeah,
and it is
yeah.
And so it's, you know, to be vulnerable and bear, you know, and I love my family, you know, and so
yeah.
It's not like a lot of work that I think comes from these deeply embedded cultures, you know, first generation immigrants,
yeah.
Kind of to me falls in like two camps of like, one, it's like super cheesy and super like just for that community,
right.
Or two, it's like a middle finger, like
yeah.
Fuck you, like
right.
I'm not.
No nuance.
Doing this thing,
there's
mom and dad.
No nuance.
And
yeah.
So for me, it's kind of like, hey, I love all these things and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And shit, when my parents see this, like they are going to be fucking embarrassed.
Is that a
and
thing?
Oh, totally.
Right.
Like, I mean,
yeah.
And it's like.
We had an episode about corporate recently with Jake and Matt that came
yeah.
on. And like Adam even brought that up. He's like, what do you like? Because it's such a dark corporate. It's
yeah.
such like a dark comedy, kind of like fatalistic, kind of like death centric comedy.
Yeah.
That
suicide
it's like
constantly.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like every other. So.
Yeah.
He asked them, he was like, when your parents watch this, when your friends from home watch this, are they like, are you okay, Jake and Matt?
Yeah.
Like, do you have your parents seen the pilot yet? Or,
not yet.
And are you nervous?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm going to show, my hope is to show them like three episodes.
Good.
So this
smart.
Way they have some context.
Smart, exactly. Smart, smart.
But it's yeah, no, I mean, it's like the pilot's very emotionally and sexually,
yeah.
you know, vulnerable and
yeah.
like out
mm-hmm.
there. And
yes.
so, you know, it's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Sexual scary. Sexual scary when you start talking folks.
Full stop. Yeah.
When you start talking folks.
When you start talking folks, but then when you start talking like, you know, Muslim folks,
oh,
it's, like,
yeah.
it's like a whole other layer.
Is there
know?
Like a, tell me about that layer. I don't think I'm familiar.
Well, you know, it's just our, the way we discuss it is not this, you know, open,
candid,
you know,
right, yeah.
thing,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
It's very don't ask, don't tell as
okay.
far as just any, you know, sexual activity. And so,
yes.
So opening up that kind of, and my parents are on, you know, what I would, you know, look, they moved to America. You know,
right.
They are like,
of course.
You know, they're not open-minded, but there's
right.
just certain things that are like,
they're also
relieved. It's just parents.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah,
it's also parents.
Our sailing team does
yeah.
a 12-minute sketch, which is the longest sketch we've ever done. And it's too long for a sketch.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we live in it. And it's called Friendly Orgy.
Yes.
And it's
I remember
you seen
that sketch.
It's just
yes.
a group of friends like discussing.
Politely.
Yeah.
Politely
yeah.
considering. Why don't we have more orgies?
Yeah.
We trust each other. We love one another.
Yeah.
And it to us, it's like the funniest. Like,
oh, it's hilarious.
Live in it. Be real about it. Like,
yeah.
discuss the pros and cons on stage.
Yeah.
And I remember my parents afterwards, they were like, so that 12-minute sketch
yeah.
was... That was a lot. No.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing with your life?
Why?
Yeah.
They like see like Adam and Sarah and Chris and Rebecca and Jen, Clayton, Varen, all these people as my brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
So
why
it's
you guys
like
doing that?
That's a lot for a parent
why,
to take on.
Why are you doing
oh,
that?
Totally.
It's a lot for a parent to take on.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. And so it's those are the things that like you
yeah.
know would lead one to cry in
yeah,
the middle
yeah.
of writing
that
a
answers
comedy.
That.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That
where you're like
that.
Where you're like, man, I love these people. Why am I putting them through this?
Yes.
But also acknowledging like it's not for them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
that's
it's
huge.
You know, if you're making something that you want to have an impact, like even with what happens with corporate,
yeah.
you know, and talking about it from that angle, and you have to
yeah.
just, you have to do things that haven't been done.
Yeah.
You have to like really sit in what you know your peers are sitting in. You
right.
know? And like we as a generation are probably more depressed than any generation before us
right.
because of a various amount of things and most of them being isolation and all these other things that like we get with tech or whatever.
Access
and so,
to
like,
too much information.
Access
to two hours, you know, and how overwhelming that is, you know what I mean? And like, even, you know, I think a lot of comedies are going to talk a lot about divorce and a lot about these things that are like going to be way more prevalent because of all the info we have on all our partners and all ourselves.
So we got to just make shit that's not for our parents.
He's right, ladies and gents, he's correct.
He's right. Second act break, we can either do another 3 minutes of silence, as was lofted out earlier.
Meditative silence.
Or we can just come up with another boy band. Another boy band song that we love.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. How about what's that song?
I can't wait.
Parents, they just don't understand.
Will Smith?
Yeah.
If you can believe it, we did an episode about school or education.
Yes.
Parents don't understand.
I believe we've played that already. I believe we've used that in the catalog.
It's episode 113. And so you do two songs that's 226 songs we've played. There's probably only about like 250 songs ever recorded.
In the world.
So we're bound to double up.
Yeah.
We're bound to double up.
It's starting to happen.
Right.
Oh, man.
But then there was the O-Towns of the world. There was B2K.
Oh, man. B2K, yeah. I barely remember.
B2K, I think that was Omarion's first group.
Yes.
Oh.
I think so.
Okay. I think they had a song called Bump, Bump, Bump. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
B2K, Bump, Bump, Bump?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you just did meant something to me.
Right.
But I don't know what. It's hitting something.
Dare we roll the dice, assume that it exists.
B2K, Bump, Bump, Bump.
I segue into the song. And then we find out if that song actually exists.
Well, we live on the edge here, right?
I think, yeah.
Do we take a bump, bump, bump risk?
Yeah.
It's resonating in the one tweezy folder.
It's in the right folder.
Yeah, you can
I don't know what it means.
Us up in one cheesy.
Yeah.
All right, I'm just going to roll the dice. I'm going to take a big swing right now, guys.
Love this, Bill.
B2K, bump, bump, bump. If it doesn't exist, you're getting another B2K song.
Absolutely.
Are we okay with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm in.
That's what it is. We'll be right back. No Joke Podcast. Bump, bump, bump.
Yeah. We sending this one out to all the ladies all over the world.
All the ladies all over the world.
All my sexy mamas. Come on, come on, come on. As we proceed to give you what you need. You know I like it when your body go pop, pop, pop. Bad boy, B2K. Yo, talk to him, player.
I like your little sexy style. Love it when you're getting wild. Girl in the club with me.
Come over here, let me talk to you for a minute.
Girl, you need to be in magazines with a crown on your head, cause you's a ghetto queen, like bling, bling, bling.
Come on, you fine, girl.
The way you're shaking that sexy body shaped like an hourglass.
Yeah, let's do it, y'all.
I wanna get you to myself, you and me and nobody else can do the things we do. Baby, there is something that I need for
you. Come on, baby, turn around and let me see that sexy body go bop, bop, bop.
That is all I wanna see. Baby, show me.
Come on,
show
baby,
me.
Turn around and let me see that sexy body go bop, bop, bop.
The way you throw that thing in me.
Come on.
I can take it,
verse,
baby. You're
teasing
me. Gonna have to stop pleasing me while we're on this floor.
Stop teasing me, baby.
Yeah.
I want you.
You're taking it round and round. I love the way you put it down.
Like
you're making me scream for more.
Give me more. Let's go. Don't stop. Come on.
Put your two way next to mine. Baby, you need me anytime. You and me behind closed doors.
Talk to me now.
You're about to be my main squeeze. Take trips, cop, shiny things. Girl, just come with me. Oh,
come on.
Now, mama, go ahead, do the damn thing.
Come on, baby, turn around.
Turn around.
See that sexy body go bump, bump, bump.
That is all I want to see.
Yeah.
Baby, show me.
I like this. Come on,
show
baby,
me.
Turn around.
Turn around.
See that sexy body go bump, bump, bump.
The way you're throwing that thing at me.
Bad boy, baby, check this out.
Call me
yeah. Dance for nothing, mommy. Plans to take a bummy. Get on the floor, make it bump more. Shake it, mommy. Let's ride, I'm your Clyde. You can be my Bonnie. See you the type for me, mommy. So right for me, man, she can move it. Love when she dance to the music. Make me wanna stand like a pool stick. Hands is the smoothest. Just a simple touch make me lose it. Girl, that's enough, stop moving. I bump that. I pump that. Girl, bring it to me, bump that. I want that. Girl, sing it with me like. So let's do it again, mommy. You and a friend, mommy. Money ain't your thing. Look, what I gotta spend, mommy. Put up your hands for me. That's how you dance for me. Shake it like you can, honey. Take it from your man, mommy. Yeah.
Turn around and let me see
see that sexy body go bum, bum, bum.
That is all I wanna see. Baby, show me. The way you're throwing that thing at me,
don't stop.
I can take it, baby.
Yeah.
Around.
You know I like it when your body goes bum, bum, bum.
That is all I wanna see. Baby,
don't
show
stop.
Me, show
baby,
me.
Turn around and
yeah.
Let me
see
that sexy body go bum, bum, bum.
The way you're throwing that thing at me,
that's right.
I can take it, no, yeah.
B2K. Bad boy, they call me Diddy, yeah, Dave Mack, you got one now, baby, don't stop, come on.
Welcome back to the No Joke Podcast. That was B2K's song, Bomb, Bomb, Bomb. So hot. That song is hot.
I mean,
yeah. Sometimes you just got to trust your gut.
Trust.
If
I
B2K,
trust
Bomb, Bomb, Bomb shows up in your mind, say it out loud.
Say it out loud.
That's right.
Make I had
real.
A flashback to a sixth grade dance. That yeah. was for me. That it was,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
Angela. B2K. Angela. Yeah.
Angela.
Yeah. Angela was the girl you took to the dance?
No, she was there though.
Oh,
yeah, I didn't.
I'm not sure if you're like inviting a conversation or if
yeah.
you're just like doing your own thing right
I
now.
I mean, we had like a thing, man.
Yeah. You and Angela.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, it never went anywhere like
yeah.
Substantive, but you know,
yes.
it was always kind of. And then my best friend.
Oh no. Got
yeah.
with Angela.
Yeah, and it was weird because so my friend, my two best friends call me, but I don't know both of them are on the line. Only one of
that's
them
sneaky.
Is talking
that's
to me. Yeah,
that's
and
beyond
goes,
sneaky.
Oh,
they
oh,
set
yeah.
you up.
And
you're
goes,
set up.
And,
it's
and
a
he's
trap.
Like,
this is bad.
What would you think if you heard
yes.
that James kissed Angela?
Other friends on mute. James is on
and
mute.
And James on mute. Oh, and I'm like,
God,
oh, dude,
dirty.
He wouldn't do that. What? That'd be crazy. Why would he do that? And then James is like,
whoa,
hey.
Unmuted?
I'm on the line.
No.
It's like a Maury Povich episode.
I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did
Springer reveal?
Why did you need the third man?
Heartbreaking.
Why did you need the third man for James? Like, James was clearly going to get on
yeah,
the line
why
at some
James
point.
Just
I
tell
mean,
you.
There's no logic to sixth
nope.
grade, man.
Nope.
It's just the whole
real.
Thing. It's
real
it's,
logic.
It is just.
That's real.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Do you keep up with Angela?
I keep up with all of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. They're
yeah.
all they're all great people.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't write off James?
I actually love all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. You forgive very easily.
Yeah. Yeah, we moved past all of it.
Better
yeah,
man
it was really
me.
Great.
Yes.
I will give each of you $1 if you can name another B2K song.
Oh, my God.
Any B2K song.
Oh, dude.
I don't think I'd even really register that I had heard of them before you said that, so
right.
I think I'm shit out of luck here.
The only thing I remember from B2K is that Omarion came out of it.
Yeah.
And I believe Tia and Tamara's brother might have been in it.
Oh, really?
Really?
Mari.
I'm taking big swings on that one.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Okay,
nothing, man. How about you, Bill?
Billy keeps his money.
Billy keeps his $2.
Another episode of Billy keeps his money.
Yes, exactly.
And
yeah.
that was Billy
yes.
keeps his money.
Now, speaking of T and Tamara and Tween Logic, I want to say your first gig when you came out here was a show on Nickelodeon, right,
yeah.
Ronnie? That you were doing for a while?
I was.
With, dare I say, Scott Baio and Mark Curry?
Both are very correct
Sick.
Things to say.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Hanging with that Mr. Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I totally hung with Mr. Cooper. I
yeah.
love Mark Curry so much.
Seems like a great dude. Is he as
amazing,
good as he seems?
Yeah. Amazing dude.
Right. Tall?
So very tall.
Tall as hell.
I mean,
great.
Just very – as tall as you think he is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is the
four.
Height he's at.
Wow.
7'4".
Four.
Yeah.
I guess actually I don't know all your thoughts.
Yeah.
Let me backtrack that.
Right.
Yeah. But he's amazing.
Yeah.
And like we were talking about, you know, coming to L.A., feeling the push to go towards stand-up.
Yeah.
And I you know, this guy's an amazing stand-up.
Yes.
And so we're on set, and I tell him, I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, I think, you know, I was doing sketch, and I'm going to try and get into stand-up more. And he goes, yeah, when's your next show? And I was like, oh, I'm doing this, like, you know, Flappers Comedy Club.
Yeah, sure.
Is the,
Burbank.
You know, Flappers Burbank. I love that place. It's
yeah.
really funny, because sometimes it feels like it's, for some people, like the butt of a joke or something.
Yeah.
To me, it is probably my favorite club.
It's nice.
Just because of the amount of times they put me up and
yeah. –
It's like real people.
Yeah, it's
not
in
like
a
it's
mall.
Not like Hollywood. Yeah,
yeah,
it's like in a mall.
It's
just
like
corner
I'm here
of a
to
mall.
Laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just people here to laugh. It's not
yeah.
like some, you know, people wearing trench coats
right.
in August at the Nerd Melt.
Trying
so
to.
So it's just it's like a fucking real place, you
yes.
know, and
Americans.
I really love it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, yeah, I'm doing Flappers, you know,
yeah.
next week. And he goes, all right. And
there
he
shows up.
Shows up.
Oh,
man.
With a cigar. You know,
whoa, hold up, hold
cigar,
up.
Cigar lit outside.
Yeah, outside.
Puts
yeah.
it out just before he gets in, but like the vibe is still
the
there.
The smell lingers.
Sits in the back.
Really?
Shouting tags at me mid set.
Oh!
Or just clapping and laughing and going, ha!
Mr.
You know, and
Cooper.
Just saying stuff. I mean, just hilarious.
Do you react? Is that one of those things where when you're on stage, you see a famous person, your new friend, Mark Curry, in the back. Do you like? Or do you address, hey, Mark Curry's in the back, or are you just in your mind like processing all this information and doing your set?
I dealt with it as I would just deal with like any of my friends who would like come and heckle, because my friends will do shit like that. So I was just laughing.
Angela just shows up and kisses all the other comedians on the list.
Yeah, you know what?
Weird way to heckle, but it works.
Yeah, more power to her.
As she deserves.
Right.
And so, you know, he comes out, does, I mean, it's so funny. And then afterwards, he's like, all right, you know, I'll bring you out with me, you know, and we'll, you know, come out with me. And so my first, like, road experiences, so we were shooting this multicam.
Yeah.
We'd shoot 3 weeks on, 1 week off, and Mark would go do dates on those weeks off, and he'd take me with him.
Cool.
And so
to open?
Just, yeah, to open.
Very and so cool. How much time would you do?
I would do like anywhere from 10 to 20 to just open
That's
up.
Real.
Yeah. Go on the road and do the whole thing. And, you know, I don't remember how it worked. I think I would just buy my flight because I was like, oh, I'm making money on a show. So I would just buy my flight and just go out and like
meet him.
You know, he'd put me up and like we kind of like, you know, but we're doing these rooms. It's really interesting because, you know, his crowd, it's a black crowd, you know, and it's a different thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different experience. I'd never performed in front of the crowds that he draws. And they're really funny because they figure out if they like you or not in 10 seconds.
Right away.
And they'll heckle, but they'll do this other thing that's even worse than heckling where they'll just talk like you're not there. Like, so it's not even like they're
we've
watching
you. Off.
You.
Yeah. We've written you off. So
background music. Your background music.
Looking up 15 seconds. He's not funny. Bye. Not Mark.
He's still up.
Anyway, what's going on?
That's real.
And then like,
that's real.
So people are just, I'm just talking to a dinner party, you know, until Mark comes out.
That is the opening act's MO. I mean, like, go to any concert. It's like you could barely hear the opening band because everyone's talking.
Yeah, it's just.
But you cut your teeth. You do it.
You cut your teeth. Yeah. I fell so hard on my face. And, like, I would just eat shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember one weekend we did the Miami improv, and I was so bad the first show. They brought in, like, another comic the next night.
Wow. That can't last.
And cut my time. Yeah. And then, but then, like, I, like, had this night of being alone in Miami. I didn't know anybody, and I just wrote like 15 new minutes. And so I came the next day.
Fear is a good motivator.
Oh, it is. Fear and loneliness fear and embarrassment and shame.
Jealousy.
All these things are where anything worthwhile comes from.
Correct.
And I came in the next day, and like, it was awesome. And the guy at the club was like, oh, why didn't you do that yesterday? And I was like,
I wrote it today.
I wasn't afraid yesterday.
I think I said jet lag.
Safe answer.
But it was, I mean, I learned so much. And watching him, I think I actually, you know, his career is so interesting because he's had a sitcom and stuff, but I wish he was in the conversation of great stand-ups because I think that guy is like world class. Like,
that's his
top
that's
10
where
talent.
He started doing stand-up and then he became an actor. Like, that's his that's his bell curve.
Yeah.
Very cool.
He is unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, he's what the way he kind of can play with the crowd it's special.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. I just learned so much.
That's a great first job in Los Angeles. Adam and I had a first job, and I'll keep some of the details out of it because I'm going to be very disparaging of it. But our boss was what our agent told us, he'll be the meanest person you meet when you live out here. So like, you're going to get that out of the way. It's like, it'll be so nice to just meet that like first asset where you're like, I find inspiration from you.
Wow.
And I'm going to try and model myself after you. We were just like, this is a bad and sad and scary environment.
Yeah. You were at the Weinstein Company.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Still working.
But it's just that bully kind of bully in power.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just like, oh my God, this is like, we just moved here. This is awful.
Yeah.
So it's great to have someone like that.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Right.
And you're so loving and kind, and you exude such a warmth and a pure, like a niceness and a sweetness.
Are you talking to me? Or
I'm talking to Billy.
Billy. So, Robbie, you can sit this next 5 minutes.
The eye contact between you two is amazing right now.
Yeah.
Go on,
Tom. I wonder if you felt like some of the stand-up comedy, because I was, again, coming from sketch and supportive, sort of like, UCB, the pit improv, and we're all buddies doing it together. And then I started dipping my toe into stand-up. I was like, oh, this is a bit of a different atmosphere. There's like a little bit more of a competitive, it's every man and woman for his or herself kind of thing. Did you feel like you had to compromise any of your natural mirth at all to like wade into the stand-up universe?
Well,
I know that's a weird question, but
no, it's not. Yeah. I think about it all the time. It's part of the reason why I say I love flappers, right? Or I love like getting on the road or finding, you know, any non-traditional room.
Yeah.
Because I will say this, like, and this isn't this is out of just pure odds and possibilities. I could see a world where I won an Emmy before I got past at the Comedy Store.
Exactly.
You know, because I don't want to do that thing.
Right.
I do think it's brutal in a way that I don't know that it actually helps comedy. Yeah. Like I think it actually creates this weird subgenre of comedy. Sometimes you're like at these places, and I respect so many people who are there who come out of there.
Same.
I don't know that I'm built for it. Maybe.
Right. Be
like,
real.
I don't know what it is, but like I have found most of the stand-up I like is performing in front of real people.
Yeah.
The, you know, and I think that a lot of people become strong comics by getting and brawling in with the stand-up community, which is cool. I just think like a lot of that fight, I kind of would rather apply to other things.
Yes.
You know, I'd rather apply it to scripts. I'd rather apply it to, you know, filmmaking. I'd rather like get my hands dirty in other ways. Mm-hmm. Just because it is tough. It's not, and it's, you know, I don't know that, you know.
Your psyche gets bruised.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is healthy, but it's like at a certain point, it's like I would rather my psyche get bruised with the work.
Yeah.
You know, and I fall on my face enough in any environment that like I don't
need to push me down, I'll fall.
Right. Yeah, like peers to also just make this.
Yeah, to also just be like, and I've been really lucky to make really good friends in stand up who are those quality people that you want to gravitate and bounce off with. But the scene can be brutal and I, you know, it's not like I'm actively avoiding it, but I'm kind of like, you know, if I don't need to be there, I'm not going to go there.
Right.
You know? And I'm fine with that. Yeah, I think everyone finds their place. And people feed, because a lot of people do grow off that, you know, so I'm not discounting it. I'm just saying for me, it's just not how I like to get dirty.
That's real. Yeah, we hosted a stand-up show as soon as we moved out here, because we just like needed to keep the live performance up while we were still figuring out what Los Angeles is, what our place is in it.
I did it once.
You did it.
Yes,
you were there.
You did it.
And it was, there was an NBA playoff game going on.
Oh, we
had it up on the screen.
That's right.
Yeah. And we were doing stand up on commercial breaks.
Did
and
I say it like, was the finals? I think it was Cavs
the
finals. Yeah.
It was Cavs Thunder. It was Cavs Warriors.
I think it was one of the Cavs Warriors finals.
It might have been a Cavs Warriors finals. Yeah, I just remember
I
remember it being on and me being like, can I just my set be narrating this?
Basically.
Can we wait till the commercial? Yeah. That's right. I love that show. It's a really fun show.
It's a great show. I realized about a year in that I don't want to be a stand-up comedian. Nothing wrong with that. It's good to know.
Right? Yeah.
I preferred writing and other things like that. But the one element I did like about stand-up was 5 minutes before the show and 5 minutes after the show when I got to meet and hang out with my fellow comedians before they all went on stage. And so, after a year or so, I told Adam, I don't want to really keep producing that show.
Right.
I'd like to do a podcast where we can take that 5 minutes where we like actually doing small talk and meeting with these creative people.
Make it 45 minutes.
And make it 45. Yeah. And like, that's the whole thing.
That's it.
And so that's why we're here.
That's exactly,
and that's so exactly right. That's why we're here.
So we're about to turn on the eBay Finals game right now.
Right.
Have it on in the back.
No, I mean, stand-ups are, you know, regardless of what route people take, I think they're just some of the coolest people. They really are. Like, and at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know that I can hang out with other people like at a certain point.
Yeah,
like,
right,
I mean, it's either got to be like, I think most of my friends are either stand-ups or people who work in like foreign policy. Because I'm like, I just need someone who
stand-up, you know, or the anti-stand-up.
Yeah. But someone who's like just trying to put themselves through it intellectually, you know, and I think
that's
what I will always respect about like the full scene. And
same.
It's kind of hard to beat that.
Same.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
That was a wonderful episode, boys. And that's
thanks so much for coming to chat, man.
It happens fast.
Great.
It happens
this
fast.
This is too fast.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah. Well, we can record a couple more episodes.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, we have all the time.
Off mic, we can just keep talking.
One for Teezy. we can start.
Good reincorpies.
Get a new I mean, this is amazing. Kombucha and gummy bears is actually what I've for those out
that's
there listening, that's what I've been feasting
on
while we're here.
That is our other podcast. You can check out Kombucha and
Gummy Bears. No, this is amazing. No, like it's really, it's so cool. I mean, even as we're talking, having this conversation, you brought up that video from like 10 years ago and I'm like, fuck, this is cool. Like,
it's cool
like,
to check in and see what matters.
10 years later, we're like hanging.
We've been watching.
Adam's on a hit show.
Right.
He's like this. And no one saw the way he walked in, but he's kind of walking like a hot TV star.
Well, it's weird that now when he walks through doors, money just pours out of his pocket.
Yeah, I don't mean it to.
It's annoying. It's all silver dollars.
Yeah. I don't like saying modest.
Right.
Yeah, it's really, you know, that Viacom money though.
Multiplies.
Viacom money somehow makes you poorer.
Poorer. Really
yeah. I just keep depositing from my, I did direct deposit, but I think it's, well, anyway, we are very lucky to have Rami Yusuf on the show today.
Thank you, Rami.
For the No Joke Podcast, I am Billy Scudieri.
I'm Adam Lustig.
Like always, we will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.